What is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And I'm still Average Ant.
And once again, we got a good show for you. Been a little bit of a hectic week, busy for me at least with baseball and finals, but definitely got to get you guys that content. So, Ant, you want to tell us a little bit about what we're going to get into this episode?
Yeah, so for all those who don't know, Mike Trout secured the biggest bag in all of sports history. So that's definitely something that's worth talking about. And some interesting, not necessarily recent trades, but Big Red and I will go back on some past trades that we liked or didn't like or whatever, just kind of living in the past with the trades. And obviously we got to talk about the Japan series, being Mariners fans, and Ichiro's final game and his career and all that. So I guess definitely kind of all around the place with content today, so we'll get into that for you guys.
Yes, it is truly Ant and Red versus the World for this episode. We're dipping into every little spot here. So without further ado, though, we'll kick off the, as Ant said, the biggest bag secured in professional sports history. Mike Trout's 12-year, $430 million contract extension with the Angels basically foregoes Mike Trout ever seeing free agency ever in his life. But with $430 million, pretty hard to turn down. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of him being on the Angels. You've heard the free Mike Trout from us here at the show. But either way, the dude secured the just absolutely massive contract. Blows Bryce Harper's record-setting deal out of the water by $100 million. Honestly, pretty crazy. I was a little surprised. Ant, what's your take?
I wasn't necessarily surprised at all, I guess. I was a tad surprised that it was up at 430. I mean, I was fully expecting for him to get over 400 for sure, especially after seeing what Machado and Bryce Harper got. So, I mean, I thought his kind of like extension or whatever was going to be based off of whatever those guys got. But it's crazy. It's the biggest surprise to me is that he was willing to stay with the Angels for another
Year. Yeah, that's kind of more what I meant, like that he didn't wait till free agency. I thought for sure he was like, let's see who's gonna offer me 500 mil.
Yeah, I mean, I guess securing the bag early is no problem. I mean, you never know what can happen with injuries, so I guess he's playing it safe for sure, keeping himself in LA. But I guess before we get into like the baseball stuff, I'll just go over some the numbers, I guess. So this contract is worth 430 mil, like you said. For every game he plays, it's 220,000. Every at bat is 61,000. Every hit is 199,000. Every home run is almost $1 million. Every RBI is 364,000. A space is 1.2 million. He'll be making 3 million a month, 692,000 a week, 98,800 a day, $4,100 an hour, and a nice $68 per minute. So just kind of the ridiculous numbers on how much money that really is.
Oh, it's absolutely unreal. I mean, I remember going through numbers like that when Felix signed his contract extension way back in the day. It was the 7-year, $175 million, and it was like, Felix is making blah, 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 almost $1 million to start and this and that. But, I mean, this contract blows it out of the water. I mean, $68 a minute? Dude, I would be jumping to make that in an hour.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole that's more than a dollar a second.
It's unbelievable. But, I mean, it's absolutely deserving. And, I mean, you jumped into the contract numbers. I'll just kind of briefly gloss over some of the numbers that make Mike Trout the best player in the world. Basically the LeBron James of the MLB. Over his 7-year career, Mike Trout's got 2 MVPs and arguably could have more. 27 years old, has a 990 career OPS, which is absurd. 64.3 career wins against replacement, which is ridiculous for a dude who's been in the league for 7 years. 7-time All-Stars, career 312 hitter, averaging, or in last season, last season he hit 312, 460 on base percentage, 628 slugging with 39 homers in 140 games. Led the AL in walks and intentional walks, on base percentage, OPS, and OPS plus. So, I mean, you look across the board and Mike Trout has the numbers to back up the eye test. I mean, the eye test, you look at him and he's the best player in the league. And then you look at his numbers, and it pretty much just confirms that. There can be maybe some debate on somebody being better than him, but quite frankly, the debate ends and starts and ends with Mike Trout, in my opinion. And so, I mean, absolutely well-deserved signing this massive contract. And as you mentioned, we're kind of more surprised that he just re-upped with the Angels. I think the Angels aren't a good team. I think Mike Trout's going to waste away a few of his prime years, but when you're getting $430 million, I mean, who really cares at that point? At the very least, he just wants to bring home a ship to LA. Mike Trout definitely kind of strikes you as one of those guys that wants to, that would love to start and end his career with the same team, a hometown guy. He's not a big, flashy media guy, and so this is kind of where he makes his money, is his lead by example type dude that's a fan favorite as well as an MLB favorite just because of how good he is in general and just a stand-up guy that he is.
Yeah, I mean, all that being said, if I had to bet on one superstar player across any sport at really any time in history to stay on a franchise that hasn't built anything around him and hasn't had any success since he's been with them, it would be Mike Trout, like, for the reasons that you just said, how he's super quiet, laid-back dude, and he's just a hometown guy. I mean, he's from New Jersey, but he's been with the Angels his whole career. So, I mean, he's loyal to them and loyal to a fault, maybe, in terms of baseball success or team success anyway, because he's getting his individual success with all the stats you stated. I mean, 312 average, 39 bombs is just the typical Mike Trout season nowadays. Like, a few years ago, it'd be like, look at the season that this guy has, but now it's like, oh, Mike Trout put up in the over 300 average, over 30 bombs again. It's nothing. That's what he does every year. But so this deal will keep him with the Angels until he's 39. I doubt he'll hit free agency again. I mean, to be 39 and sign another contract, I mean, I don't know. Mike Trout might be an alien. He might be able to still be good at that point in time, but I guess time will tell. So, I guess getting into like the baseball side of this, he's stuck in superstar purgatory for another 12 years, which sucks. I mean, it's the LeBron syndrome, the Anthony Davis syndrome, all that stuff where you're really good, you're too good to be wasting your talent on a team that's not going to build around you. And I guess it's more so in basketball where you're too good to get lottery picks and all that, but it's still this kind of the same effect with Mike Trout and all that. So it's unfortunate that he's going to be stuck with the Angels for 12 years. So I guess with that being said, what's kind of your initial feeling on this?
On the baseball side of things, I mean, the one thing I think we should keep in mind is the fact that the MLB, in terms of all-time legacy, is unlike the NFL and the NBA, where it's rings. Rings determines just whether or not you're the GOAT. In baseball, there's just so many, like, baseball is just a game that anything can tip the scales, and so it's really rare to see somebody just come in and win a bunch of championships just because one guy doesn't have that big of an impact. Not to say that Mike Trout doesn't have an absolutely massive impact and makes the Angels a playoff contender every year just by being on the roster, but Mike Trout alone doesn't make you a championship contender in the same way that LeBron James, with the exception of this year, obviously, like LeBron James does on a roster where you're like, oh, all we got to do is see LeBron get to the playoffs and then he can kind of take over. Baseball's not really like that. And so because of that, the rings aren't viewed as a massive piece of the legacy. And so I think that definitely makes it easier for Mike Trout to kind of stay in superstar purgatory, as you mentioned. But the facts of the matter are, that's exactly where he's sitting right now. I've talked about it multiple times. I think the Angels, they had an okay offseason. They brought in some arms to kind of try and fill out their shaky rotation. But at the end of the day, the Angels are a fringe contender in a league with the likes of the star-studded Yankees, star-studded Astros, star-studded Red Sox, and you look over at the Angels and they're like, oh, they still have Albert Pujols?
Yeah. Oh.
Weird. All right. But I mean, at the end of the day, Mike Trout wants to win a championship there, and hopefully the Angels can... I don't think they have a championship roster right now. I could be wrong. Season's just started. But I don't think they have a championship roster right now, and signing Mike Trout to an extension doesn't really change a whole lot. So disappointing in that sense, in terms that I think we're going to see Mike Trout wallow a little bit on some 500 teams. But he's still Mike Trout. He's still going to put up his numbers. He's still going to build his legacy, and he's probably going to still walk away from this game as arguably the greatest player to ever play it. So with all that in mind, if you have 12 years, $430 million looking in front of you, you never have to worry about finances for your kids' kids, or your kids' kids' kids. I mean, that's a ton of money. And on top of that, he's going to – I mean, I know he's not an outspoken guy. We touched on it, but he's still getting sponsorships and different kinds of revenue other than just his contract. So overall, I think it's a huge win for Mike Trout, just in terms of just financial stability and – I mean, honestly, signing a contract that proves you're the best player in the league. But, again, I would have liked to see him out of L.A., and maybe we'll see a trade down the line. I mean, you got to see eventually if Mike Trout's 33 years old and the Angels are still bad. I mean, if they're a bad team when he's 33 years old, I think we could kind of see maybe a Robinson Cano-style trade, where I think anybody'd be happy to take Mike Trout. But that massive contract is something to look at, especially on the latter half of it, where he would probably get traded. But either way, huge deal for the Angels. I guess we didn't really mention this besides talking about how bad the Angels are, but it's a huge win for the Angels. I talked about it earlier in the year. I think the Angels were a big red bust, and just in terms of how they hadn't really done anything to solidify a championship roster around Mike Trout. And I thought Mike Trout was going to say, screw it, and leave. But he didn't. The Angels gave him enough money to keep him in town, and that's a huge win for them. And having the best player in the league to build around is pretty much, I think, any team in the league would wish for it. So hopefully the Angels don't keep screwing it up.
Yeah, that's on all of our wish lists, that the Angels are able to build around Mike Trout and create a contender and all that. Because, I mean, even the year where they won like 100 games, they weren't necessarily seen as a legit contender for a World Series championship. But I like that you brought up kind of the legacy kind of thing, because like you said, rings don't matter as much in baseball as they do in basketball or football. Just for example, Barry Bonds is a guy who didn't win a ring at all. He has the steroid scandal and all that, but he's still looked at as the greatest player or greatest baseball player of all time in a lot of people's eyes. So, and on the other hand, you got Derek Jeter, who's won a handful of rings, and he's in no conversation at all for being greatest of all time. So, I like that. Like this decision was easier for Mike Trout because he doesn't have to necessarily worry about his legacy, because in baseball, your legacy is pretty much up to you and what you do on the field, and not necessarily where you carry a team. And unfortunately for the Angels, like you mentioned, they do have Albert Pujols, who's at the end of his contract, he'll be 42 years old, making $30 million. So that's
dude, that's something, yeah, crazy. That's kinda, man, tough. They're now gonna have two guys on their roster with $200+ million contracts. Like, goodness, yeah, gracious.
Albert Pujols has already came out and said that he's getting to fulfill his contract, which, I mean, it's no surprise. I'm not trying to slander him. If I was in his position, I'd be doing the same thing. Gotta get all that money that you can. But so I guess where I like this move for the Angels, obviously it's always a good thing when you could have the best player in baseball on your team. But in my eyes, Mike Trout probably has at least 5 years or so as still being the best player, not debated at all, in baseball. And even after that, it's not going to be like a huge decline. It's going to be more like the LeBron decline, kind of, where he's like, you could still say he's up there for the best, but now it's like him and five or six other guys and all that. So for the Angels, I mean, they still have a building cornerstone for another at least half plus a year or two on that contract, where you could legit say that you could build around Mike Trout. So that's a huge win for them. Obviously the money for Mike Trout is great. After this contract, he's gonna make $505 million in his career just from contracts. So that's super dope for him. And I guess those are kind of my thoughts on the baseball side of the Angels and Mike Trout.
Yeah, Mike Trout is a $500 million player. Very exciting for him, and sadly exciting for the Angels. Pretty sad for the AL West, because we got to deal with Mike Trout for another 12 years. But either way, big news for the best player in baseball. And as we kind of discuss legacy and things, let's move on into some of the, kind of the past trades that we wanted to look at. So, Ann, I'll let you take this one away.
Yeah, so what kind of sparked this whole segment was I saw, I think it was on Bleacher Report, was an article that the stat nerds, don't take that offensively. Stat nerds are cool, I guess. But they came out and said that the Khalil Mack move for the Raiders was the best move in football that year. So it just made me kind of think of past kind of trades, and after talking to Big Red, he brought up the Rams trade for RG3, or the Rams getting all the draft picks for RG3 and all that. So kind of just made me think of past trades, and I mean, it was a little bit slow, so it was a little bit slow week in sports, so it kind of seemed like an interesting segment. So without further ado, my first trade is a rare win-win for both teams. I want to start off on a light foot, kind of. Is the Pau Gasol trade to the Lakers. Nowadays, it's seen as the Pau-Marc Gasol swap. But so the Lakers got Pau Gasol in a 2010 second rounder, while the Grizzlies got Kwame Brown. Thank God that the Lakers got rid of him. Javrius Crittenton, I don't know how to pronounce that. Aaron McKee, and the 2007 number 48 pick, which ended up being Marc Gasol. 2008 first and 2010 first. So why this is a win-win for both teams is obviously Pau and Kobe teamed up and won a couple of championships, got to three straight championships. And then the Grizzlies, led by Marc Gasol, gained relevance. The Grizzlies were just kind of wallowing in the NBA. No one really cared about them at all. But then once Marc Gasol, Mark Conley, Zach Randolph came through, they were able to give the Grizzlies some relevance. And I mean, it's debatable that if they had a superstar player that they could have actually been in contention, if not winning a championship. So a rare win-win for both teams. Obviously, the Grizzlies were a younger team, so getting that kind of relevance was great for their franchise. And obviously, for the Lakers, championships are all they're about, and they got two from that trade.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, a rare win-win for both sides. I mean, I think even NBA aside, that's just kind of rare in general. There's almost always a clear winner and loser from trades. So, I mean, it's with the kind of player that Marc Gasol evolved into and giving relevance to the Grizzlies franchise, it can't be viewed as anything but a win for both teams. Like you said, the Lakers got their championships and the Grizzlies became a relevant franchise in the NBA and one that legitimately competed in the playoffs. And I mean, I don't know if any Grizzlies team was ever looked at as a championship roster, but I do remember the days of Z-Bo and Marc Gasol, and the Grizzlies were just a grinded out kind of squad, and they were viewed as one of the only teams to not buy into the three-point barrage of the NBA. And Marc Gasol was a huge factor of that, as he eventually evolved into shooting threes himself. But either way, I completely agree. Win-win for both squads, and it's definitely an interesting trade to go back and look at.
Yeah, especially the context behind it and all that. Like, I always remember the Stephen A. clip where he's asked if the Lakers gave up too much for a guy who's labeled a soft, referring to Pau Gasol, and he just goes off on the Lakers got rid of Kwame Brown. They should throw a parade whether or not they win the championship. So, I mean, it's always fun to go look back at this trade specifically just because of, like, all the context behind it on from a basketball side for the Lakers, and then just, like, the comedy side with the NBA media and all that. So great win-win trade example. Wanted to kick it off on a good note instead of ending it on a good note. So I guess, do you have a trade real quick that you want to mention?
Yeah, I'll jump in. Mine are kind of more baseball-centered. This just inspiration kind of last second came to me as I just want to shout out kind of the Roy Halladay trade, sending him from the Blue Jays to the Phillies. Roy Halladay established himself as one of the best pitchers in the MLB during his time with the Blue Jays, and as we saw, got into the Hall of Fame this year, so his efforts have been rewarded. And this trade for the Blue Jays happened in 2011, December 16th in 2011, I believe, where the Phillies sent Kyle Drabeck, Michael Taylor, and Travis d'Arnaud, for Roy Halladay, obviously. And this was a time in which the Phillies were championship level contending teams, and I mean, they brought in a guy at later in his career, but still pitching at a prime level. And Roy Halladay, as we know, got to come in and pitch lights out through a perfect game and no-hitter in the playoffs, and, I mean, really established his dominance in the playoffs, which we talked about how rings aren't that big of a thing for MLB guys. But still, everybody wants to win a championship, and everyone wants to see how the best players in the league compete in the postseason. And so we got to see Roy Halladay compete at the highest level, and we got to see him dominate. And while the Blue Jays didn't get a whole lot out of Drabek, Michael Taylor, or d'Arnaud, d'Arnaud's turned into a solid player, not for the Blue Jays, but... So this is a trade with a clear winner and loser. The Phillies were winners and the Blue Jays were losers. But at the same time, I think that the Blue Jays win this trade as well. Just in terms of sending away Roy Halladay at a time when the Blue Jays weren't necessarily going to go anywhere as his career kind of dwindled down. And we got to see him on a championship caliber team. And that to me was huge. Whether or not the Blue Jays got a big return or not, this kind of follows the theme of both my look back trades. But either way, I'm glad that the Blue Jays kind of wised up and sent him on. And I mean, when you get guys like this later in their careers and they've been kind of all-time greats for your franchise, you yourself as a franchise and a fans want to see that player succeed in the playoffs. And as much as it stings to not be on your team, you still want to see him be successful. I know if Felix got traded several years back when there was a lot of talk around it about him maybe being traded to kind of kickstart the rebuild, and he said he wanted to stay in Seattle. While I loved and respected him for wanting to stay in Seattle, I wish the Mariners could have made the playoffs. And looking back, I would say I wish that the Mariners had traded him so we could have seen Felix Hernandez in his prime in the playoffs, just like we got to see Roy Halladay in his prime in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. This is... This Roy Halladay trade kind of like it emulates what could have been with Felix, I guess, because Roy Halladay really built himself and kind of cemented himself as the best pitcher or one of the best pitchers in the MLB with the Blue Jays. But the Roy Halladay that we know, that we always look back on, is Philly's Roy Halladay because of like the playoff moments and all that, the no-hitter against the Reds and stuff like that. So it's really interesting that a guy who had already like built up so much in his career built what we know of his career, really, what we usually look back on after the trade and after he kind of was kind of like over the hill a little bit. Obviously, with the Phillies, he was no scrub by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he's still up there for one of the best pitchers in the game, but he was obviously on the downside, to say, on his career. But that's Roy Halladay we know, the Roy Halladay that we look back on. RIP Roy Halladay, and that definitely well-deserved Hall of Fame nod, too. So,
yeah, for real. RIP Roy Halladay. Loved watching you. Loved watching the things you could do on the mound. All-time great for sure. And just a great trade to look back on and just kind of revel in Roy Halladay's success with the Phillies, even though he was on the back half of his career. I guess moving on, I'll just kind of jump into my other one since it kind of follows the same theme of kind of sending an aging veteran to a team that can win championships. In this theme of Ichiro retiring, officially announcing his retirement, I just kind of wanted to bounce back and look at when Ichiro was traded to the Yankees. The infamous trade before the series started where Ichiro just switched dugouts, basically walked about 100 feet to his new team, put on his new uniform, and started in right field for the New York Yankees in Safeco Field. And after the trade was completed in July 24th of 2012. This is a little bit of a different situation just because Ichiro was 38 years old, and yes, he is semi the ageless one who just retired at 45, but he was definitely on the downside of his career, hitting .261, his career low, the season he got traded. But at the time, he got traded to the 58-38 New York Yankees, who are in first place in their division, and it legitimately seemed like Ichiro was going to have a shot at a World Series. And again, just like with Roy Halladay, but this time as a Seattle fan, it stings a little more to see Ichiro walk out. But it was great to see him on a team that had a shot at a championship, and it didn't happen, but it was still kind of the right move for both the Mariners organization and Ichiro. I still remember the teary-eyed press conference, and it was almost like it was breaking Ichiro's heart to go play for a different team. But he knew he had to do it. The Mariners knew it had to be done. The overall details of the trade is the Mariners got prospects DJ Mitchell and Danny Farquhar, both relief pitchers. Neither did a whole lot for the Mariners. Farquhar was pretty legit for a while with us, but we ultimately traded him away to the White Sox, I believe. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what the Mariners brought back just because of the kind of good terms that we left like Senichiro away with. I mean, it was – we sent away the dude arguably – the best player in franchise history. Now he has to compete a little bit with my true all-time favorite player, Ken Griffey Jr. But Ken Griffey Jr. left for the Cincinnati Reds in his prime, while Ichiro stuck around for as long as I feel like he could have with the Mariners. And so either way, it's, again, one of those where you kind of look back, and while it's not a win for the Mariners by any means, it is kind of a moral victory in that you get to send one of your best players away to a team that had a chance at a championship. And kind of got to see him play out his career a little bit, bouncing from the Yankees to the Marlins, and then ultimately back to the Mariners. So, I mean, it kind of came full circle, and we really got to see the appreciation that Ichiro had for the franchise. And I'm sure he seriously appreciated the Mariners sending him to the Yankees at the time, because I imagine he had views of championships himself. And only being in the playoffs one time with the Mariners, that's rough, especially when that one time you make it, you win league MVP and rookie of the year, and then spend the next 11 years on the team without a playoff appearance. So definitely was a tough one to swallow seeing Ichiro leave, but overall, I was glad to see him go to a team that had a shot, you know?
Yeah, this trade was really tough on me, honestly. it was like when I was in like seventh grade or something like that. I don't remember specifically what year it was or what grade I was. But obviously, I was young and emotional. A lot of things going on in the head and body and stuff. So this one hit me. It didn't look right the first time I watched Ichiro play in a Yankees uniform, and that was against the Mariners, especially wearing number 31. Obviously, out of respect, he didn't wear number 51, but it was just really weird seeing him in anything other than a Mariners uniform and in anything other than 51. But the good thing is about trades is that we can always look back on them. So now with a smarter, more mature mind, I'm able to kind of reflect on this a little differently. And I mean, like you said, he went out on good terms, which is something that you always love. Obviously, he came back, or we brought him back, so definitely good there. And we gave him a shot, to say, I guess, of sorts, to kind of capture a ring that he was looking for coming off of. It's like you said, it's kind of a bummer when you come into a league, win MVP, rookie of the year, make the playoffs, 116 wins, and then after that, never make the playoffs again with that team. So it's tough there. I mean,
yeah, all because of the stupid games, dude. Mariners won like 90-plus games like 3 years after that and didn't make the playoffs. It's big stupid.
It's unfortunate. I guess it's just the Mariners' luck. I don't know what the Mariners did. But we sent Ichiro out on good terms, and he came back on good terms. He got to retire with us, which is what the universe wanted, obviously. You never wanted to see Ichiro retire in something else other than a Mariners uniform. So just the overall good trade, I guess. I mean, the return on it wasn't great, but what more are you going to get for a 38-year-old Ichiro who was at his career low in batting average? So definitely, yeah. It was a tough trade at the time, but looking back at it, it's all good.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think I would have the same kind of revel in the sending him to a championship contender back in 2012. I was big into the memes of either live long enough to die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And I remember seeing those memes all over the place, and I was big into him just because I was like, come on, Ichiro is a Yankee, like I hate the Yankees. But looking back here six plus years later, it was good to give him a shot, even if it didn't pan out. And so, I mean, all things pointing up for Ichiro, and we're definitely going to be talking about him a little bit more coming up. So I'm going to kind of move on, let you take over your last few trades there,
Andy. Yeah, for sure. So I guess I'll continue on this trend of trading a veteran to a title contender when you have no hopes of contending. This, of course, is the Randy Moss trade to the Patriots. Obviously, my Oakland Raiders traded him to the Patriots. We got fourth rounder out of it, but the Randy Moss experiment in Oakland just wasn't working out. So wasn't more I guess that we could trade him for, especially for the age that he was at. He seemed like he was on the decline, I guess. But obviously in New England, he had a career renaissance. Randy Moss and the Patriots would go on to have one of the greatest offenses ever. Obviously, this was the infamous, legendary Randy Moss 23 touchdown season. And I guess for the Patriots, probably the best return on any trade ever in NFL history, since all they did was give up a fourth rounder and got a dude who put up 23 touchdowns in the wide receiver spot. So looking back on it, I guess when Randy Moss came to the Raiders, it was when I started playing football. So obviously I had to wear that number 18 for my boy Randy Moss. So it was a bummer for sure. But I mean, he wasn't going to accomplish anything in Oakland, or I guess career-wise anything adding to his legacy and all that. And obviously he didn't play for Oakland for all of his career. So I wasn't super salty about it. And I was only like 8 at the time, so I didn't really find out he got traded until that Super Bowl when he played with the Patriots. So, I mean, it's always fun to look back at it. The Patriots ended up kind of getting the boomerang and blowing a perfect season and losing to the Giants. So I guess that's kind of cool to look back on.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually a lot of things to kind of consider when you think about this trade. Quite frankly, like I almost forget that Randy Moss even played for the Raiders. I mean, no offense to the black and white, but or black and silver, whichever. Yeah, black and silver. his kind of legacy last year with Oakland, at 42 receptions for 553 yards and 3 touchdowns, to then go on to 1,493 yards and 23 touchdowns once you get Tom Brady. I mean, you definitely expect better numbers after a switch of quarterbacks like that, when the Raiders were kind of split in time between Andrew Walter and Aaron Brooks. Yeah, you don't remember those QBs, and neither does anybody
else. I remember
else.
Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks, he played for the Saints, right? That was like his team where he kind of like broke out on, I guess, if you want to say he broke out.
Yeah, I guess if you can consider it that. But yeah, I mean, either way, when you go from kind of from basically two quarterbacks competing for a job to arguably the best quarterback of all time in Tim Brady, no, I didn't mess that up. I wanted to call him Tim Brady. and then they go on to put up arguably the best offensive season in NFL history, as you mentioned, 18-0, and then lose to David Tyree in his helmet. there's just a lot of things with this trade, and I mean, it's a fourth round pick. It's a win-win no matter what Randy Moss really does for the Patriots. And I mean, you look back and you can't really. Randy Moss wasn't going to do much on the Raiders, and again, it's nice to look back and see him go somewhere that he can be successful. It is the Patriots, so I'm never going to say that I'm happy he went to go win or try and win championships with the Patriots, but either way, big win for Randy Moss, and the Raiders just kind of moved on from a guy that wasn't necessarily a perfect fit for them at that time, and it's definitely a fun one to look back on just because of all the different factors that were going into it. And then, of course, you get an 18-0 season, regular season, and all the way up to the Super Bowl. And so, I mean, it's huge for Randy Moss. And I mean, he was great early in his career with the Vikings, with Dante Culpepper and Randall Cunningham. I think his last good year was actually Randy Moss's rookie year. But either way, Randy Moss is a GOAT, and he was out there torching the likes of Darrell Revis and company all season long, and Patriots fan or not, it's pretty incredible to see him and Tom Brady do work.
Yeah, I mean, like we both said, it was one of the best offenses ever. if he ever put up any numbers in Oakland, they'd just be pretty much empty numbers. I mean, this was definitely like the Jamarcus Russell era, I guess. Obviously, he wasn't the quarterback, but I mean, that's kind of just puts into perspective of how bad the Raiders were during that time. So, I mean, I don't hate Randy Moss or anything for getting traded. Randy Moss is actually my favorite receiver ever, so I guess we'll leave it at that. I actually saw Randy Moss Raiders jersey at Goodwill, but it was too faded for me to buy, so that's kind of a bummer on that. So, I guess moving on, I'll get into another one of my favorite teams, which is the Sacramento Kings, and this was obviously the Chris Webber trade to the Kings, which gave the Kings relevancy, the first kind of relevancy they've had since, like, Oscar Robertson was there. So, I mean, kind of dope on that. The Kings gave up Mitch Richmond and Otis Thorpe. Wizards obviously gave up C-Webb. Kings became relevant for the first time in forever and haven't really been relevant since then. C-Webb is a huge reason why I'm a Kings fan. I'm a huge Michigan fan, so you know, I'm rocking with the Fab Five and all that. So C-Webb obviously being Michigan alum coming to the Kings, us not having a team in Seattle, gave me a huge incentive to root for the Kings, I guess. So just kind of quick on that.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't speak a ton to the trade and all that just because it obviously predates my kind of NBA interest, as I was barely a few months old when the trade happened. But at the end of the day, I mean, they gave up a fan favorite in Mitch Richmond for kind of Chris Webber, who had off-court issues. See, we're bouncing all over the place, dude. I'm even jumbling. I'm a sports fan. obviously, had some off-court stuff, and it was kind of a gamble by the Kings, but obviously it paid off and gave the Kings relevancy and gave you as a fan, as a Kings fan without the Sonics, something to cheer for and something to look back on now as we kind of do something like this and really just appreciate one of the few good moves in Sacramento Kings history.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, we'll just end it on that. We're not going to get too far into the Kings history. Then, I mean, like I said, they weren't relevant since the days of Big O and haven't really been relevant until this year, I guess, where they're not making the playoffs, but I'm not mad at that. So I guess to kind of bridge the gap between do you have any more trades?
Nah, nothing really else I want
to
dive into. All right,
so to kind of bridge the gap between topics real quick, I'm going to dishonorable mention the Mariners on their trade history. Obviously, these are guys who you can't really predict what they're going to be at the time that they were traded, but the Mariners have traded David Ortiz, Adam Jones, Jason Varitek, and Derek Lowe in the same trade, and Omar Vizquel. So just kind of quick Mariners slander before we get into some positive talking about the Mariners, which is the Japan series. So I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, and I don't even want to talk about all those guys, dude. Even imagine, bro, Ortiz. That might even be the Mariners' curse, dude, giving up Ortiz,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah, it could be. Like,
something, dude. I'm convinced we're cursed. Just because of, like, these rosters we put together, man, it just seems like that every time the Mariners are good, the A's are like, hey, we're going to win a few more games than you this season, even though we're not expected to, which is why I hate the movie Moneyball.
Yeah, I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I read the book and all that nonsense, but sitting there looking at the Mariners with 96 wins and the A's make the playoffs, dope. Dope. But speaking of the Mariners and A's, the MLB is back. The official season began at 2 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesday. And the Mariners opened a two-game series in Japan in the Tokyo Dome against the Oakland A's, the aforementioned playoff killers for the Mariners. But this time around, the Mariners got the last laugh as they opened the season 2-0 with a 9-7 win over the A's on day one. A lot of offensive fireworks. The Tokyo Dome is a place to hit nukes. So Marco Gonzalez got roughed up a little bit, but the Mariners were able to outslug the A's in game one. And then in game two, it took 12 innings, but the Mariners were again able to come away with a 5-4 win. A lot of different storylines and takeaways for this kind of short series here as the Mariners kick off the season on pace to go 162-0. So, I mean, with all that hype in mind, Ant, you want to kind of get into some of your bigger takeaways from the short series in the Tokyo Dome?
Yeah, so I guess besides the obvious Mariners are going to go 162-0 this year takeaway, we'll get into some smaller, I guess if you want to call them smaller ones. But I guess my first one is Kikuchi pitched pretty good. Only went 4 2/3, but I mean, it was his MLB debut, so not really expecting him to go a complete game or anything. Gave up 4 hits, 2 runs, only one of them earned. I'll take that outing as a MLB debut anytime. I guess another one, Mitch Hanegoat, showing that last year wasn't an accident. He showed that he was legit. I mean, he's only 2-for-8, but I mean, if you want to say only 2-for-8, you can, I guess. But he had a double and a home run with 2 RBIs, so just showed that he's legit and he's Mitch Hanagoat, so he got that nickname for a reason, and he's living up to the Hanagoat hype. And another, if you want to go from one goat to another, Tim Beckham is the obvious next Mariner great. going 5-for-7 with a double, a home run, and 2 RBIs. Always great to see him go off like that. And my last takeaway, kind of unfortunate, D. Gordon still can't draw a walk for some reason. him, Jay Bruce, and Ryan Healy, I believe, all put up zeros in the category. I mean, Ryan Healy and Jay Bruce, not that big of a deal. But I believe D. Gordon have 10 at-bats, I think, and not getting a walk in is kind of not upsetting, but a little disheartening, I guess.
Well, I mean, I guess I'll just kind of build backwards through each one of your takeaways and give my piece on, because they're pretty much the same as mine. D. Gordon's never been a big walk guy. He's one of those dudes. He's an Ichiro-style dude that likes to swing and feels like he can hit anything as long as it's close to the zone. And, I mean, when he's hitting over 300, that's fantastic. Yeah. But, I mean, he was around 270-ish last year. And so, I mean, the focus was for him to get more walks. And in spring training, he actually showed a lot better plate discipline. And so it was a little disheartening to see him come into the opening series and, like you said, have the 10 plate appearances and no walks. But it's early. I'm not too worried about it. I think that while this Mariners club is definitely in a rebuild mode, this offense has still got firepower. It's something that's going to be fun to watch. I mean, Tim Beckham was kind of a stopgap veteran guy, former first overall pick, but stopgap veteran guy to kind of fill while we wait for J.P. Crawford. But he's leading the league in batting average. You know, he's 714. I mean, it's I don't necessarily expect him to keep up 714, but, you know,
I'd
like to see two.
I'm expecting
280 out of Tim Beckham or something would be nice. I mean, this offense has got firepower. Ryan Healy off to a good start. Haniger off to maybe not the best start average wise, but he makes an impact. He hits the ball hard, and he hit a nuke that was instrumental in games that were decided by 3 total runs. So definitely good offensive things to look at there. You mentioned Kikuchi was solid in his MLB debut. Only 4 2/3 and gave up a few runs, got pulled after he got into some trouble, but he tossed up 4 zeros. And so, I mean, that's definitely something to look at, especially in the Tokyo Dome, a hitter's ballpark. With that in mind, there's something I kind of just want to mention, a little correlation. Think about how good Hisashi Iwakuma was for us over his time here. I mean, injuries plagued him a little bit. He came over here at an older age. But he ended up putting up some great seasons for us through a no-hitter against Baltimore. Hisashi Iwakuma barely made the roster when he first got onto the Mariners and actually opened the season as a long reliever and struggled a little bit right out of the gate. But I think it was a 21-5 win against Texas way back in Hisashi Iwakuma's rookie year, and Iwakuma threw like 4 innings in relief to get like a 4-inning save, basically. I mean, yeah, we were winning 21-5, but he kind of started to get on a roll there. And obviously, you know, now he entered the rotation and became a legit 2 or 3 starter for the Mariners, following up Felix. And so with Kikuchi stepping right into the rotation in the 2 spot and to put up 4 straight zeros to open your debut, I mean, it's definitely a positive sign. I think Kikuchi's going to be legit for us. I'm not too worried about Marco Gonzalez giving up the 3 or 4 runs that he gave up, just because Marco Gonzalez throws about 90 miles an hour, likes to keep the ball down, likes to keep the ball on the ground, and in a hitter's ballpark, some are going to get out on you. If you miss a spot and you got guys like Chris Davis and Matt Chapman, they're going to hit nukes. It's just going to happen. And so with that, I mean, I wasn't disheartened by really anything the Mariners did. I mean, I'm still worried about their bullpen a little bit, but Hunter Strickland came in and saved both games. And I mean, that's a big sign. The closer role is a big question mark for the Mariners going into this year. And I mean, I'm obviously the 162-0 is mostly a joke, but it's still nice to see these guys doing well, even though some of these veterans might get traded at the deadline just for doing well. But I mean, a lot of good takeaways on the Mariners side. For the A's, the bullpen still looks strong. Mike Fiers struggled a lot in the opening day start. Estrada did okay. Other than that, I mean, there's not a ton of highlights for the A's. I'm not an A's fan, but I imagine it was pretty disappointing to see him go in and lose 2 games to the rebuilding Mariners. But maybe just a little message from the Mariners, too. Like, we're going to put the league on notice still. We got young guys in our core still here. Or we got this young core now, and we're starting a new movement in Seattle. And so not a lot of great things for the A's. I mean, the offense still has firepower, like I said, with Matt Chapman and Chris Davis. But at the end of the day, the M's came out on top. And the only thing that supplants the Mariners starting 2-0 against arguably a championship-contending team in the A's is the official retirement of Ichiro Suzuki, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. Pretty incredible. I would have loved to see him retire in Seattle, like in not Safeco, but in T-Mobile Park.
We're still calling it Safeco.
I would much rather still call it Safeco. Yeah. But it was still good to see Ichiro retire in Japan. I mean, all week we're seeing quotes from former Japanese player. Ichiro is essentially a baseball god. He's essentially the baseball god of Japan. And I mean, you saw Kikuchi tear up. You saw D. Gordon tear up. Ken Griffey Jr. is there. I mean, everyone appreciates the just overall greatness that Ichiro brought to the field and brought over from Japan, and everyone in Japan respects it too. I mean, Kikuchi in his interview after said that basically anything was about Ichiro. Oh, Ichiro's in this magazine. Ichiro's on TV. Ichiro's this. Ichiro's that. And so I guess another kind of thing that links in, I think it was really cool that Kikuchi got the start in Ichiro's final Major League Baseball game ever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to touch on the Ichiro stuff. This is something that we all saw coming once like the Japan series was kind of announced. We all knew that Ichiro was going to come back, play his final games, and retire in Japan in his home country and all that. To kind of put it into perspective, Ichiro in Japan is like what Michael Jordan was in the 90s, but times like a million. It's crazy the impact that one guy that Ichiro is has on a nation and a sport in that nation. I mean, you saw it with Kikuchi. He couldn't control himself. I mean, he was crying like a little boy. I mean, and that's what he means to the nation of Japan. I mean, as Mariner fans, we all love him, but Ichiro in Japan is just it's on a whole nother level with the respect and all that they have for him. The most kind of interesting thing about Ichiro, but something interesting about the end of his career, this game specifically, was that the Mariners beat the A's 5-4 in his first game ever. The Mariners beat the A's 5-4. So kind of
crazy. I didn't even know that.
I saw a tweet.
Yeah.
I have to fact check it, but that's really interesting. I mean, everything, what goes around comes around, I guess. It all came full circle. Ichiro, I'm glad he ended his career in Japan. As much as I'd love to see it in Seattle, I'm not going to call it T-Mobile Park, but as much as I would love to see it in Seattle and potentially have a chance to be there live for it, I mean, it's bigger than baseball pretty much, Ichiro in Japan and all that. So, I mean, shout out to Ichiro for a career. He's a Hall of Famer for sure. Can't wait for him to kind of make his return to Seattle and all that, the standing ovation he'll get there. So, shout out to Ichiro. Great career. We love him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you kind of summed it up perfectly there by saying it's bigger than baseball. I mean, it is. I even have in my notes here, just kind of talking about the massive ovation he got as the whole Mariners team cleared the field for Ichiro to walk off in the eighth inning. I wrote, incredible doesn't sum it up.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of a phrase. I feel like that it sums up Ichiro's whole career. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, the dude's career .311 batting average. I saw factoid on Twitter, maybe fact check worthy again, but, he could go 0-362 and still finish with a career .300 batting average, which is unbelievable. Absolutely magical to see him walk off in the Tokyo Dome. I would have loved to see him get an infield single on his last AB on that little dribbler up to Marcus Semien, but didn't get it out. Lost it by half a step, and obviously, at 45 years old, you're not going to be getting a whole lot of infield hits, but just to even make it close and make that his last AB, a classic Ichiro kind of swing or what would have been a single in Ichiro's prime. At the end of the day, incredible doesn't sum it up. I'll say it again. Farewell to arguably the most beloved player in Major League history. I mean, he's a guy that never had really any character concerns ever. Is nothing but Ichiro this, Ichiro that. And absolutely phenomenal player, phenomenal human being, and I'm just glad he got to be a Seattle Mariner. I mean, it's something. I know we don't have a World Series, so being able to rest your hat on guys like Ichiro Suzuki and Ken Griffey Jr. is something pretty incredible. And just to be, I was a little too young for Ken Griffey Jr., but still my favorite player. Just watching all those highlights on MLB Network, but I was there for Ichiro, and I got to see Ichiro live and be an MVP type player. I mean, I think he had a walk off. I guess my best Ichiro memory, I'll just throw it in here real quick, is I think we're down 4-3 to the Red Sox, I think, and I was messing around with my buddy Tanner and wasn't all that too into it. But then Ichiro came up in the ninth, and it was well, we got to see this. I mean, we got to see Ichiro, and 2-run bomb, unbelievable. Ichiro, thank you for everything you've done for the city of Seattle and just baseball in general, Japan, everywhere. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, Ichiro's pretty much up there in a class of his own in terms of like character and how well he's liked and respected by everybody, like universally. I don't know. My tongue can't say that word. Ichiro, it's, I guess if you want to make a class, it's maybe like Ichiro and Mariano Rivera, pretty much, are the dudes that nobody can really say anything bad about, or you can't hate. I mean, you could, like, you might be able to throw Derek Jeter in there, but I mean, Boston fans hate Derek Jeter, so can't really put him in there. But anyways, I mean, Ichiro, like you said, for guys like me and you who have been watching the Mariners, born in the year 1998, we're around three when Ichiro came in and won the MVP. So I mean, we've been alive, like our lives have pretty much been intertwined with Ichiro's career as Mariner fans. So obviously sad to see him go, but I guess the terms which he went are ideal, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely, as good as you could have hoped for. And I guess we'll kind of move on from the Japan series and wrap things up here. I got a couple big red ballers and busts here. Big red baller, obviously, got a shout out, Blake Snell. Son of my head coach, Dave Snell, secured the bag himself. Not necessarily a Mike Trout six duffel bag securing, but he got that 5-year, $50 million contract extension just a little bit after I busted the Rays for giving him the weakest arbitration increase. It wasn't arbitration, I guess, actually. It was a year before that. Only raised him $15,000, which is ridiculous, but now they finally ponied up, gave him that 5 years, $50 million, $3 million signing bonus. There's incentives for Cy Young votes and a Cy Young win. So overall, huge. Blake secured the bag. Hopefully, he can keep being one of the most dominant left-handed pitchers in the game. Definitely exciting to see, especially since I sold the dude a hot tub. I was definitely happy for Blake, and it's good that he's getting the money that he earned after having arguably the best season of a left-hander in MLB history.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is spring training when he struck out Bryce Harper. I kept seeing all the tweets of like 500,000 versus 30 million or whatever. It's honestly a little bit disgusting that the Rays didn't give him a bigger raise. What, they give him like 15,000, something like that?
It is 15,000, and they waived his the fee for renewing his contract of 5,000.
Yeah.
And to put it in perspective as well, the minimum raise that they had to give him was 10,000.
Yeah.
And they gave him 15, so that's about 5,000 more than. Basically, he got a $5,000 raise before signing this extension. So.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, but I mean. I guess at the end of the day, or I guess at the end of today anyway, he got his bag. Shout out to Blake. Hopefully he can let me hold a dollar or something. But I'll keep you guys posted on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll kind of move on to my big red bust. Back into the NBA realm here. It's Oklahoma City Thunder. It's a team that we just in our last episode had as one of our threats to the Warriors, and they are now sitting at the 8th seed in the West, tied with San Antonio and the Clippers, one game behind the Utah Jazz for the 5 seed and 2.5 behind the Trailblazers for the 4 seed. So definitely jumbled up, but I definitely don't recall including the Clippers and the Jazz or San Antonio as threats to the Warriors. And so when you're sitting at an 8 seed below them where you might face the Warriors in the first round, I'm sorry, the Thunder aren't beating the Warriors in the first round. And they're unfortunately looking like a team that I don't have a lot of confidence in the playoffs right now. I mean, yeah, they've had some tough opponents this month and losing to the Raptors, the Heat, the Warriors, Clippers, San Antonio. So those are good teams. I mean, those are playoff teams for the most part. But this is the time of year where you get hot. You do what Houston is doing, and you have a strong second half and kind of prove that you are in contention. You are a title contender. But Thunder are kind of doing the opposite. They're playing these teams that are ahead of them in the standings. I mean, I think they beat the Trailblazers this month. Other than that, I mean, they're losing to teams that they should beat and teams that you expect them to compete with. Now, it'd be great to see him beat the Warriors. Warriors are the Warriors. But you'd like to see him compete with the Raptors, another team that's a threat, teams that are ahead of him that we obviously believed had a better shot of beating the Warriors. And so just a week after talking about the Thunder as a possible threat to the Warriors, it's really disappointing to see him in the 8 seed.
Yeah, I mean, disappointing is a perfect word. Obviously, the West is super close and competitive, so I mean, it could change by next week. The Thunder could be back in like the 3rd seed or whatever, but
absolutely.
Yeah, it is disappointing. I mean, especially if you want to look at the Thunder, and I'm assuming the Thunders want to be considered at least a tier 2 team with the likes of the Rockets and Raptors and Bucks. I mean, obviously the Warriors are tier 1, they're by themselves, but if they want to be on that tier 2, they have to beat the Rap. They can't lose to all these teams. I mean, obviously I'm not gonna expect them to go out on a stretch and beat the Spurs, the Jazz, the Raptors, and the Warriors all in a row. But I mean, you have to come out of that span at least 500 or better to be considered kind of a tier 2 and an actual competitor. So I mean, if this trend kind of continues, I hope they kind of kick it around come playoffs. A Warriors Thunder first round matchup would be super interesting to watch. It's always, I guess not always, but a lot of the times, especially now with Paul George on the roster, the Thunder and Warrior games have been really fun to watch. So I guess kind of silver lining, if the Thunder do keep sliding, or I guess just stay stagnant where they are, then we'll get a Warriors Thunder matchup in the first round.
Yeah, which, don't get me wrong, it'll be exciting to watch, but it's definitely not the best situation for the Thunder.
Yeah.
But like you said, the West is a jumbled mess in terms of competitiveness, and I mean, it's just, we're just going to have to wait and see, because like you said, things could change. The Thunder could be the 4 seed next week.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
Like I said, they're tied with 3 teams for that 8 seed, but either way, the Thunder got to step up, and I mean, hopefully this is their wake-up call, because I do want to see that Paul George MVP and Russ kind of combo and see what they can do to the Warriors. Not that I necessarily don't think they can beat them, but at the same time, Paul George has been a guy that's competed at the highest level against the best competition, so hopefully the Thunder can turn it around a little bit here, because I have far less faith in the Spurs, the Clippers, and Jazz in Portland than I do the Thunder, despite them being in the 8 seed.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess transitioning, I'll hit some honorable mentions real quick. I'll stay on the Thunder, because my first honorable mention was on the other side, on the Raptor side, which is Kawhi Leonard. Just real quick, he catches Paul George. I keep wanting to say Paul Pierce for some reason. He catches Paul George in the post, hits a couple dribbles, and then gives this smirk, and then hits him with a fadeaway jumper. This is crazy. I mean, the robot's back at it. What I'm assuming is running.
Most humanoid thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, what I'm assuming is going through his head as he gets it. Paul George has his elbow on his hip instead of his lower back, which is what Kawhi would do in that position defending. And I guess what I'm assuming is running through Kawhi's head is like, oh, this is the guy that's supposed to be a better two-way player than me this season or whatever. So he gives that smirk, hits the post fadeaway in his face, and ends up with a dub that night. So definitely something very interesting. I mean, you never really see that from Kawhi anyway, so it was really cool to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of joked about it, and you did a little bit too, but Kawhi's a robot. We don't see him react. And so, I mean, it's, yeah, I personally love seeing personalities come out in game and in competition. And I know Paul George is a dude that's pulled up 15 feet from the 3-point line to hit a 3. So I mean, it's definitely funny when you see the robot hit a little hit a little shimmy, a little smirk on MVP candidate Paul George.
Yeah, definitely dope. So I guess from one, I'll get into my last honorable mention, from one MVP candidate to another future MVP candidate, Elfrid Payton. This dude, the last like week or so, he's had 5 triple-doubles. I want to say they're consecutive. I'm not 100% sure, but I know for sure he has at least 3 consecutive triple-doubles. It's just crazy. I mean, I know we're kind of in the era of triple-doubles, and they've kind of lost their value to a degree, but I guess just big shout-out to Elfrid Payton, just balling. He was kind of written off as a bust, not probably like last year or the year before that. So, I mean, it's good to see him come around and kind of live up to the potential that we saw him and thought that he could kind of get to.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, Elfrid Payton semi kind of being viewed as a bust. He bounced around a little bit, and Russell Westbrook obviously has diminished the value of a triple-double, but at the end of the day, a triple-double is nothing to scoff at, and Russell Westbrook aside, it's actually really cool to see Elfrid Payton do well. I mean, I felt like he had potential his rookie year, and then kind of not much happened there, but whether or not it's 5 triple-doubles in a row or just 5 triple-doubles in a week and a half span, it's still impressive. And shout out the boy, Elfrid.
Yeah, I mean, all this came after he cut his hair, so. Or did he? He cut his hair, right? Like that wave that he had?
Yes.
All right, so I guess good things come when you shave the wave off your head. So I guess that's the lesson from this episode. So with that being said, I got nothing left. So this is Average Ant signing off.
Yep, and that is it for me as well. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Like we said, we bounced around a lot and got a lot of content in for you. And Big Red signing off.